Sluggishly, Ryan came awake, clawing for his blaster. Then, slowly recalling what had happened, he released the weapon. He raised himself off the wall and sat with his shoulder against the roof. The interior of the sideways APC was dully illuminated by a reddish glow coming from the starboard vents and blaster ports. He could see the others lying crumpled nearby, slowly showing signs of life. Rummaging for a candle on the wall, Ryan found one and carefully used his hands to squeeze the squashed wax back into shape before using a butane lighter to ignite the wick. As weak as the flame was, it brightened the interior considerably.
Okay, first things first. We survived. Did they?
Damned if I know.
JB straightened his glasses. His beloved fedora was partially showing from underneath Mildred, but he made no effort to reclaim the hat.
Oh, dark night. It feels like we did a bad jump and landed in a cement mixer that exploded.
Mildred struggled to sit upright.
Any damage, John?
Nah, just bruised everywhere but my teeth.
Extending a hand, Ryan helped Doc to extract himself from a tangle of canvas webbing.
You okay, Doc?
I only injured my pride. Running from a pack of overgrown bedbugs is hardly conducive to vainglorious edification. Gloria brevis.
That was old talk from before even Skydark. Ryan rubbed his chin.
Which means what?
All glory is fleeting.
The one-eyed man looked grim.
Yeah, but getting aced is forever.
From the nose of the APC, Jack groaned, abruptly ending their conversation.
My arm.
Hurrying closer, Mildred checked over the albino teen.
It's not broken, just dislocated. You know what that means.
Fix.
Placing her boot in the youth's armpit, Mildred took his limp arm by the wrist, gently turning it ever so slightly, then in one fast move, pulled with both arms while shoving with her leg. Jack bared his teeth from the intense pain, but to his credit, didn't yell out in agony. Once it was over, he relaxed and exhaled deeply, gingerly flexing his fingers, then his elbow.
Thanks. Better.
No charge.
Mildred probed his shoulder with her fingertips. There was no deep tissue damage. It had been a clean separation.
How about you can do me next time?
Deal.
Dean squinted through an air vent.
I can't see anything out there. There's a lot of smoke.
That'll take a while to clear with no ventilation system working anymore. Unless there's something on fire. Mother Gaia, what about the fuel dump?
If it had caught fire, we'd be ashes already. But we better go see just in case.
Forcing himself to walk to the rear doors, he released the handle and the hatch swung down to loudly slam against the hull. The noise painfully stabbed through his forehead, and this time Ryan touched the sore spot to find his hand coming away smeared with dried blood. Fire blast. Just how long had they been unconscious? While JB and Dean had moved close beside the man, their blasters out and ready to give cover if needed, Ryan stepped through the hatchway and carefully stood up. The garage was in ruins. The pre-dark wag smashed against the walls. Even the Hummers had been flipped over, one of them dribbling oil from a cracked engine block. Ryan relaxed a bit when he realized it was the puddle of oil that was burning and causing the dense smoke. A thick plume rose from the blaze, spreading across the ceiling in a roiling blanket of fumes. Thankfully, the fuel storage closet seemed undamaged from here. What little remained of the mutant bugs was scattered absolutely everywhere in a grisly display of pinkish organs and black legs. Several pieces of millipede were lying in the puddle of motor oil, spitting grease as they cooked from the heat. The horrendous stench hit them now, and the companions were forced to tie cloth over their faces to keep from retching.
An emperor worm by any other name.
Mildred held a sleeve across her face and gave the old man a sour look.
Stop mixing your Shakespeare, even though I agree with the sentiment.
Standing near each other, Ryan and Christy shared a private look and briefly touched hands. They had taken a hell of a gamble, but it worked, and they were still alive. JB had cut the single stick of dynamite in his possession into four smaller charges and stuck them into coffee cans filled with office staples. When the dynamite exploded, the entire garage had been filled with a brief hellstorm of flying shrapnel. more than enough to kill every bug in the room. JB waved his crumpled hat to fan the air.
Unfortunately, the blast also got the wags. The ones that weren't wrecks before sure as hell are now.
Bet it ended in us.
Ryan started to reply, but cursed instead.
Fuck.
There was a clear puddle of fluid in front of the supply closet. The source was trickling fuel from a score of punctured containers. The spill was only yards away from the oil fire and extending fast.
Shit fire. If that goes, we're dead.
Dean pulled off his jacket. Advancing to the fire, he started to beat the flames.
We've got to get this out!
There was an extinguisher near the workbench.
Doc headed that way through the maze of twisted military vehicles.
No time! Quick! Give me a hand!
Christy climbed onto the side of the APC. Standing on tiptoes, the woman lit a butane lighter and thrust it at the thick smoke, but was still too far away. Joining her on top of the transport, Ryan grabbed the woman around the waist and lifted her as high as he could until she was lost inside the layer of smoke, able to play the tiny flame against a sprinkler set into the ceiling. At first, nothing happened, and Christy started to cough from breathing the oily fumes, but she refused to quit. But then, after a few moments, every sprinkler in the garage released, gushing out volumes of an orange fluid that soon doused the fire and washed the floor clear of the potentially deadly fuel spill.
That's not water.
Mildred tasted a drop by licking it off her palm. She made a face and quickly spat it back out.
Some sort of chemical composition. Must be designed for oil fire, since this is the garage.
Makes sense.
Ryan watched the excess flowing into hidden drains set along the walls. The stink was soon cut from the atmosphere, and the companions went back inside the APC to get out of the downpour. But after only a few more minutes, the sprinklers began to sputter, the rain of fire-retardant chem foam slowing to a mere dribble, and then stopping completely.
No electricity means no pumps to maintain pressure. Good thing this wasn't a major blaze.
Just then, a millipede crawled into view from the cracked ventilation shaft in the closet, snapping its pinchers at the orange residue of the retardant covering the fuel containers. Pulling a knife with his right hand, Jack passed it to his left and threw. The blade hit the mutie in the mouth, and it recoiled, snapping as blood gushed from the wound. Christy lowered her own knife and tucked it away.
Looks like the blast didn't get all of them. Stay sharp. There may be others.
However, the bugs really don't like this stuff.
Ryan brushed back his hair to tie a handkerchief around his forehead.
And that gives us an edge again.
The chems were making the cut on his forehead throb with pain. Hopefully the cloth would help. He knew that Mildred could stitch the gash shut, but there was no time right now. They had only a few candles and much to do.
Okay, there's a lot of wreckage now to block both of those cracks, so let's get moving.
He kicked a foam-drenched mutie carcass out of his way.
We'll start with a big crack, then do the closet.
Jack massaged his shoulder.
Haul out fuel cans, then push busted car against door. Now get past.
And in case they do, we can use the flame retardant as a bug repellent.
Mildred scooped a handful off the dented hood of a luxury car and smeared it over the legs of her army fatigue pants.
That should keep them off of us. For a while, anyway.
JB scrunched his face in thought.
Gonna need more light than these damn candles. Maybe I can rig a nuke battery to some headlights. Might be worth a try.
Some of these trucks don't appear in too bad a shape. With some luck, we might get something running and drive out of here before another swarm of those damn things arrive.
What if they're outside, too?
Ryan glanced around the wreckage, filling the level.
No sweat, son. Any of these wags that we can get moving should easily outrun the bugs.
That was, Ryan added privately, as long as there was open ground outside. If they were on the side of a mountain, or buried under the debris of a collapsed pre-dark city, it was going to be the last train west for all of them. Doc flicked a dead millipede head out of the way, with the pointed tip of his sword.
Besides, there is no place else for us to go but out.
Working by the flickering glow of tallow candles, the companions emptied the closet of the fuel cans, and then completely jammed it with wreckage, next pushing the corroded hulk of a Cadillac against the door to hold it closed. Then the wall crack received the same treatment. A millipede caught inside the crevice almost got Dean's hand, but missed and only sank its pinchers into the sleeve of his jacket. Instantly, the boy ducked out of the way, and his father cored the bug with a handball round from the Sig Sauer.
Tough bastards!
Dean used his knife to hack up the face of the millipede until prying off the pinchers. Meanwhile, JB had extracted a couple of nuke batteries from the military vehicles and was trying to wire a headlight from a Hummer, using a starter solenoid to control the current flow. Each time he flipped the switch, the bulb would burst from the surge of raw power. Yet the man was determined that he could fix the technical problem. As Ryan stepped away from the fortified crack to pound the solid barrier with his fist, there was a dazzling wash of light, the huge makeshift flashlight filling the garage with brilliant illumination.
Well done, John!
Mildred smiled, clicking off her pocket flashlight.
Now we can... Shit! Over there, by the GMC!
Two millipedes hidden under a tipped-over GMC 6x6 wag scurried for the darkness. But the bugs moved much too slow. The companions converged on the area and quickly dispatched the insects with makeshift clubs.
A messy job indeed.
Doc snapped his sword to the side to whip off the blood of the millipedes. Briefly, the fluid filled the words etched along the length of Spanish steel, and then was gone. Testing the balance on his tire iron, Jack flipped it into the air and caught it effortlessly.
Saves ammo.
Checking their blasters, while JB assembled two more of the nuke battery headlights combinations, the companions proceeded into the redoubt and a full sweep of the dark interior. The air tasted bad, sour with dust, and the emergency lights set in wall niches were dead or dying everywhere. But the nuke lamps more than made up for that. Checking in lockers and underneath desks, the friends did not find another Sec Hunter droid and only a few millipedes. Disoriented by the searing beams, they were easily aced. The kitchen yielded only a few cans of self-heat soup, some rice, and beans. Everything else in the fridge and freezer was inedible. Added to their jerky, the staples would last them for a good week. Yanking out some of the dried venison, Jack chewed on the tough stuff until his jaws ached, but it eased the pain in his belly for the moment. Breakfast had been a million years ago, or so it seemed, and he had no idea when dinner would be coming around, so it was best to eat anything and stay sharp. This was sure as hell not the place for a prolonged meal, and nobody knew what was waiting for them outside.
Treja.
Dean offered a stick of chewing gum from an MRE military ration pack. After a moment's hesitation, Jack nodded and the items were exchanged. Chewing steadily, the two youths patrolled the darkness, their hands full of loaded steel. The supply room was empty, only a few yellow transfer papers and military codes strewed about. However, in the armory, the companions discovered an entire pallet of U.S. Army ammo boxes, filled with cardboard cartons of .22 cartridges still sealed in plastic. The ammo looked good, but unfortunately, none of the companions used that caliber in their blasters. But lead was lead, and gunpowder could be transferred, so they each took several cartons and stuffed them into their backpacks. The ammo would also make a good trade item. If they found a vill outside, between the cigars, fuel, and these boxes of cartridges, the companions could barter for weeks of hot food and clean beds. It was quite a find. Going through the barracks, Ryan led the way as the group checked the footlockers set before each bed. Often they found small luxury items the soldiers had left behind by accident, but such wasn't the case this time. Every footlocker was empty. Not even a scrap of paper had been left behind.
Maybe no troops ever here?
Jack nudged a neatly folded blanket with a tire iron. The material collapsed at the touch, raising a small cloud of dust to cover the yellow sheets.
Possibly.
The barracks seemed to be more than merely empty. It felt totally deserted, as if no troops had ever been stationed there. But then, where had the tons of supplies gone? Or had they also never been delivered? Perhaps this was only a partially built redoubt, caught unfinished by the war. The idea made a lot of sense and explained everything they had seen so far. Making an inarticulate noise of displeasure, Christy angrily pulled at the orange-soaked top of her jumpsuit.
Ugh! This dried foam is becoming sticky. Our blasters are going to jam if we don't get this crap off of us soon.
Shower should be over here.
JB led the way with his nuke lamp. Bypassing the small private showers in the officers' quarters, the companions instead chose one of the big shower rooms for the troops. Without working pumps, they knew that the water pressure would last only a very brief time, so they would have to clean off quickly and all together. Leaving the nuke lamps safely outside the shower, the group gathered in the middle of the tiled room and turned on the faucets full force. There was a hiss of escaping air for a moment from the ancient pipes, Then they were hit by a stinging spray, still pleasantly warm. Frantically, they scrubbed the orange residue of the foam off their clothes and out of their hair, and barely finished in time before the warm water turned cool, then cold, and finally sputtered to a halt.
Damn, that felt good.
Mildred shook her beaded hair to dispel the excess water. With that action, there came a loud crack of glass, and one of the nuke lamps winked out. Rushing over to the doorway, JB inspected the destruction without touching anything with his wet hands.
The bulb shattered when the water hit it.
Oh, John, I'm so sorry.
It's my fault. I should have realized that was going to happen and set these farther back. Damn, what a waste.
Jack squeezed water from his long snowy hair.
Better than candles.
Well, that's for damn sure. But nobody goes near the lamps until they stop dripping.
Wish we had some towels.
Help yourself.
Ryan gestured at a stack of thick military towels on a shelf. The fabric was coated with cobwebs. The boy eyed the neatly folded pile of dust and mold dubiously.
You first.
JB reclaimed his glasses from a steel ledge designed to hold soap.
That reminds me of something an old acquaintance used to say about wishing. Put a wish in one hand, take a crap in the other, and see which gets filled first.
By Godfrey, sir. Vulgar yet pragmatic philosophy.
Doc wrung his frock coat in both hands with surprising strength.
Okay, enough jawing. We'll drive faster walking than standing in these bastard puddles.
Staying well clear of the hot lamps, the companions splashed from the shower, and once in the locker room of the barracks, took the opportunity to carefully check over their blasters. Washing off the foam had helped a great deal, but they disassembled the weapons on the hard benches to clean every part. Rummaging about in his backpack, Jack unearthed a small plastic squeeze bottle of homogenized gun oil he had looted from the armory of Novaville so many months ago. The precious lubricant was passed around and used liberally until every blaster was in smooth working condition once more.